May 3rd, Sunday morning, Sherei Tefillah. We are learning Tractate Rosh Hashanah, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Chapter 1, Mishnah 2. We'll begin with a little bit of review of the first Mishnah that we did last week, the first Mishnah of the Masechet, then we'll go on to this material. So, the Mishnah last week we learned Arba'a Rashei Shanim Hem. There were four New Years. And we remember that we discovered that of the four, there are two that are core, two that are central, and two that are in some sense peripheral. And we saw that division between the core and the periphery on a number of different levels. I'll just say some of them. The two of the four here are Doraita, two are only Darabanan. Two divide the year into two equal parts. The other two create an lack of symmetry in the calendar. And it's the same two that are Doraita that create the symmetry, the same two that are Darabanan that create the asymmetry. We also notice that there are two that are designated as Rosh Hashanah for more than one event, more than one meaning, and two of them that only have one meaning. And lo and behold, it's the same two that we said are Doraita and that are symmetrical that have more than one meaning. And it's the same two that are Darabanan and asymmetrical that only have one meaning. So in those three bases and more, we were able to say that the two that are Doraita, that are symmetrical, that have more than one meaning, are the core of the Mishnah, and the other two are secondary, and perhaps historically the other two were added to the core of this Mishnah later. So what are the two that are Doraita, that are central, we said that are core? They are Nisan and Tishrei. The first of Nisan is Rosh Hashanah for Jewish kings and for the framework and cycle of the Jewish festivals, whereas the first of Tishrei is Rosh Hashanah for non-Jewish kings, for agricultural, natural things, not Jewish things necessarily. And we talked last time about what might be the main religious message of the Mishnah, which is that there are two foci to the calendar and two foci, therefore, to the consciousness of a Jewish person. One, that the world was created in Tishrei, you're a member of the world, you're a Ben Adam, you're part of the larger brotherhood of nations and larger fellowship of the earth and of the ecological natural system. On the other hand, we are Bnei Yisrael, also have this second counting of time that begins in Nisan with the birth of Yisrael. That was what we talked about last time, in just a two-minute summary. Next Mishnah.
That's why we can have a 45-minute class in the fall.
Next Mishnah. But no one would have understood the two-minute summary had we not had a two-hour class. The Arba'a Frakim Haolam Nidon. So let's talk about each word.
The Nidon is judged.
Very good. So the first word, Ba'arba'a, that we know. Four, right? Frakim. So that word, Frakim, in the singular, it's Perek, right? So what do we know about that word? What are the contexts?
Perek of Mishnah.
Perek of Mishnah, right? A Perek of Tanakh.
Chapters.
A chapter. Let's also think, do you know the word from the Tanakh at all? Do you know the word from Halakha? I don't know if you know this, I'm not sure. There's a mitzvah in Sefer Shmot and Parshat Mishpatim of Prika, Lifrok. It means when a donkey is walking on the way with a burden, or a different animal of a burden, and it falls down, it falls under its weight. In order to help it get up, very often you have to take the burden off so it can get up and then put it back on. The mitzvah, when you see someone's donkey on the side of the road, the mitzvah to help the person is prika and tina, unloading and then loading. So the word also means unloading. Another use of the same root. Let's think you have a coalition agreement in Israel, and at a certain point there's a lack, there's a vote of lack of confidence, and the coalition comes apart.
Oh, yeah, hitparek.
Hitparek.
Came apart.
Wow. To come apart.
Okay.
So let's see all the different uses. A perek is a chapter. Mm-hmm. Lifrok is to take the burden off the donkey. Lehitparek is to come apart. And then we have the use here. All of these uses have really the same meaning. A perek is a taking apart. It's an ending. Right?
Yeah.
When we say that you take the burden off the donkey, it means you take something apart. You take the things from the donkey. The coalition comes apart. It's ripping asunder. You have a chapter. A chapter is the end. It's a coming apart of material. Okay. So what does it mean here? The arba prakim olam nidon. At four intervals, at four ending points, at four coming apart points, the world is judged. So English translation would be four instances.
Junctures.
But now we understand why the word junctures and the word chapter is really the same root, because it's an ending point. It's a coming apart point. Okay.
Juncture, an English word?
Juncture.
Yeah.
Barbap frakim holam nidon. At four junctures, the world is nidon. So what's the root of the word nidon?
Done.
Okay. Right?
Yeah.
Nidon is judged.
Judged. Mm-hmm. It's in the passive. Is judged. Whereas if I want to actively judge, ladun, to judge, what is the noun we all know that comes from this root?
Din.
Din, right? Din is judgment. The root is Dalid Vav Nun. And it's those roots in the first binyan, the Kal binyan or the Pal binyan, that have their middle letter as a Vav or a Yud. And others like it, there are eight others like it approximately. Oh. La Dun.
Latus.
Latus. Very good, Latus. Which means la'uf, right? To latus is to fly. La'uf is to fly. But one is a bird, one is a man. Lagur means to live or to sojourn. When I want to get from one place to another place very, very fast, what do I do?
La'ruts,
right? To run. And another one is lashir, to sing.
Sing.
Yeah.
That's about all of them. That's about six. There might be one other. So, and what we call these in Hebrew are pa'alei, ayin vav, pa'alim verbs of ayin vav. That means the ayin slot, right? Every verb has three slots.
Uh-huh.
The pay slot is the first letter. The ayin slot is the second letter. The lamed slot is the third letter. The word pa'al means verb. So each letter of that is the slot in the root. So it's an ayin vav verb, which means the ayin slot has a vav or a yud, and they have unique conjugations.
Oh, lakum.
Lakum, that's it. That's the last one. Very good.
Very good.
For that, Eric gets a gold star.
I forgot the star. Did you bring the star?
I didn't bring them. I went to Walmart. I'm sorry. I went to Pumpkin to get the food, and I didn't buy the gold star beer.
Walmart.
I made a mistake. I didn't go to Walmart. I went to Tom Thumb. So anyway, barba frakim olam nidon. And we already see that at least literarily, structurally, the Mishnah is parallel to the first Mishnah. Because the first Mishnah also began with a koteret, with a heading, that had the word Arba in it. At the first Mishnah was Arba Rashei Shanim Hem, colon, there are four new years. And this one begins, there are four prakim at which the lam is nidon, colon, and it gives you the four. So it's structurally interesting. We'll have to see the connections later. Next, b'feisach al hativua. That's not a sentence, it's a dangling sentence, because it's a clause that comes after the opening. At four junctures the world is judged, colon, at Pesach on the tivua, which of course means that at Pesach time the world is judged, on the tivua. What is tivua?
Grain.
The grain, right?
You have a dagesh in your pay?
Yeah.
Which pay?
A buffet. You said buffesach. Is it?
Bepesach, I'm sorry.
Oh, okay.
I was influenced perhaps by the prakim, which doesn't have a dagesh in it. Bepesach, right. So anyway, the world is judged for the grain at Pesach time. So let's think two thoughts. One is, why at Pesach time? And number two, what indication in the Torah is there that the world is judged at Pesach time?
Am I allowed to cheat? Because I have...
You're not allowed to cheat. So let's think of the agricultural cycle in Eretz Yisrael.
So the beginning of the rainy season.
It's the beginning of the
dry season.
And what happens at that point is that the barley begins to be ripe and ready to harvest. Pesach is the beginning of the barley harvest. So what we have, which is the beginning of the grain harvest, because the wheat is harvested after the barley. Usually about 6, 7, 8 weeks after the barley, the wheat begins to ripen in the early summer, whereas the barley began in the spring to ripen. So what we're being told is that right before the first grain is ready to be harvested, that's the point of din. That's the point of judgment. And apparently it means if there's going to be a good crop or a bad crop or a mediocre crop is judged, is decided right before you begin harvesting, the last minute. By the way, the Meiri learns from that nothing is ever certain. Even if you see the growing season went wonderfully and you're about to harvest it all, the din takes place at the very last minute to remind you that everything is precarious and your fate can turn around in one moment. There always has to be reliance on a Kadosh Baruch Hu.
That's easy to understand with the Hurricane Katrina. And
right, things. Yeah, and one second everything can be turned around. Yeah. Now let's think in the Torah. What indication is in the Torah that Pesach is a time in which we are thinking about, worried about, being judged on the grain? What is there a grain offering on Pesach? Giving it away.
The Omer, right?
Right, what we're counting now begins with the bringing of the Omer. We're counting, we're really not counting the Omer, we're counting from the Omer.
Yeah.
The Omer is the offering of barley that's brought on Pesach. Now, of course, it's not explicit in the Torah that it's brought on Pesach. It's Torah Shebal Peh. But it seems very possible from the Torah that it's brought on Pesach. This is in Parshat Demor. This week's Torah portion. I'm going to read it this week. So let's just read that then, Parshat Demor. We're going to open up.
My bar mitzvah.
Your bar mitzvah? Your book is coming up.
My bar mitzvah. Yes.
Actually, it's mine also.
Okay, we'll party together.
But when I was bar mitzvah, it didn't mean learning the Torah portion. In my temple.
298.
Temple, part that's, of it, right? That part gives away most of it.
Yeah.
But you learned part of it, right? Not the whole parsha, but did you learn
part of it? I was supposed to learn part of it, and I did. Uh-huh. But the rabbi couldn't believe that I actually knew it, so he whispered it in my ear.
Oh.
And I was so upset that he was whispering in my ear when I knew it myself. Anyway.
Parsha Emor.
We're Parsha Emor, Perek Chaf Gimel. 23. And at the very, very beginning of the perek, we're going to look at, Mr. Beck, look at Pasuk Dalet.
Pasuk Dalet.
The chapter 23, right over Dalet. Elamoede Adonai. Mikra e Kodesh Asher Tikru Otam Bemoadam. The Kodesh Harishon
sounds like Kiddush.
Ba'arba Asay Lachodesh Ben Arbaim Pesach Ladonai Ba'chamisha Asayom Lachodesh Hazeh Chag HaMatzot, L'Adonai Shivat Yamim Matzot Tochelo. V'yom Rishon Mikra Kodesh Elechem Kum Lechat Avodalo Tasu. V'kravtem Ishe L'Adonai Shivat Yamim V'yom Ashvi Mikra Kodesh Kum Lechat Avodalo Tasu. So the discussion here, at the beginning of the list of festivals, first of Pesach, then of Chag HaMatzot. And the very next verse says, V'yadaber Adonai Moshe Lemor, Debel b'nei Yisrael v'amart aleihem, ki tavo'u el ha'aret. When you come to the land, asher ani noten lechem, which I give to you, uktzartem et tzira, and you harvest its harvest, ve'vetem et omer reshit kitzirchem el ha'kohen. You should bring the omer to the kohen, etc. So without going into everything, you see that the mention of the omer comes right on the heels of the mention of Pesach and Chag HaMatzot. And according to Chazal, based on verses that come here in the coming chapter, it's to be on the eve, in other words, the Motzei Yom HaRishon Shel HaChag. The 15th of the month is Chag HaMatzot, and Motzei HaChag is when we start bringing the Omer. So according to Torah Sheba'al Peh, there's an intrinsic connection between Pesach, Chag HaMatzot, and the Omer, which means a connection between Pesach and the grain, the beginning of the grain harvest. And that's reflected here in the assertion that this is a time of judgment.
What do you mean, v'yikraftem isha l'shem?
That you should sacrifice a woman to God.
This was what they asked me, and I didn't say, okay, well,
right, it's not an isha, it's an ishe.
Said, right.
You didn't make a mistake, I just made a joke. You said Ishe, you're right. Right. You sacrifice an Ishe, which what is from the word Ish, the word Ish, a fire offering.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Uh-huh. Right. Make no mistakes about it. Look, that just shows you how a little mistake in vowels can really get you in hot water. Okay, back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Batseret al perot ha'ilan.
So the literary structure of this second clause in the list of four is parallel to the literary structure of the first in the list of four. The first was the Pesach al tivo. In other words, ba, a certain time, al, x. And here it's ba etzeret, and etzeret is a certain time, al, Peirot Teilan. So when is Atzeret?
Shavuot.
Right. In the language of Chazal, Shavuot is called Atzeret, a gathering. And it means that Shavuot time, the world is judged on the Peirot Teilan. We learned that word Ilan back in Masechet Brachot. We learned that the word Ilan is the
Aramaic,
the Mishnaic form of the Hebrew word, which is
Eights,
right. Eights. The Hebrew is eights.
Yeah.
I didn't say clearly. The biblical Hebrew is eights. The Mishnaic Hebrew is Ilan. So we have to ask ourselves, what's the logic of the world being judged for the fruits of the tree, specifically at Shavuot time? And secondly, is there any hint in the Torah to any connection between Atzeret and the Perot Ilan? So let's do the first question first. Why would we be judged for the Perot Teilan specifically at Atzeret time? And it's the same answer as the question, why at Pesach time are we judged on the grain?
Is it the juxtaposition between bringing the two breads, the two loaves of bread?
You obviously read the commentary.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry. That's
so, and that's actually a problematic answer what the commentary gives there.
Okay.
But let's think back. If we said that Pesach time is the beginning, the very, very beginning of the grain harvest, when the grain is just ready at the very beginning to be harvested, and that's why it's called the time of the judgment, then the same thing is true for the fruit of the trees. It's in the time of Atzeret that the fruit of the trees is just ready to begin to be harvested.
Is that the time then, around Shavuot time?
Yeah. Remember, there are different trees.
Yeah.
We're talking about pomegranates. We're talking about grapes. We're talking about figs and dates. And all of those, their main harvest season is later on in the summer, but in the lower valleys of Eretz Yisrael, where it's a little bit more warm and humid, the very beginning of the time when things are first ready on the tree is, for the figs, example, in the hottest of Israel, is in the time of the beginning of the summer up at Seret.
Like the Jordan Valley, that area.
Right, exactly. And then we have to ask ourselves, is there any hint in the Torah to this connection between the fruit of the trees and Shavuot? And here, it's difficult, because there really isn't any connection. And Eric read in a commentary a connection that's difficult to understand. Because what Eric said is that there's a source that says, we'll talk about another few minutes, that there is a connection to the Torah. The Torah says at the end of the Omer, when you come to Hag HaShavuot, you bring a mincha chadasha, a new grain offering, which is shtei halechem, the two bread loaves, and that is the peyot elan. But it's not. It's not.
It's a grain.
Because it's a grain. It's not its tree. So here they bring in the famous midrash. That grain is really a tree, because in the Garden of Eden, when it talks about the tree of knowledge, there's a midrash that says it was wheat. Okay, but excuse me, you know, it's not peyot elan.
This basically says that when you bring the shtei lechem, Hashem will bless your fruits.
So again, what's the connection?
Yeah, right. That's
so the better understanding is probably that although it doesn't say it in Torah Shebichtav, Chazal said that the first time you can fulfill the mitzvah of Bikurim, of the first fruits of the tree, is indeed at Hag HaShavuot. It doesn't say that in Torah Shebichtav. But that's the halacha. The halacha is, we can look now in Dvarim Chafav, for the mitzvah Bikurim.
And you're saying it probably is that way because that's the natural agricultural cycle.
Exactly. Everything fits together.
Yeah.
Dvarim Chafav, Perek Chafav 26. In our edition here of the Art Scroll, it's on page 487. And here on page 487, the beginning of Perek Chafav, it says, 487.
They're different. Where's the
487.
Five. Oh, okay.
That's
the same thing.
Right. 487 at the bottom. Vaya ki tavo el haaretz asher Adonai Elohecha noten lecha nachala v'yirishta v'yashavta va, when you are settled in the land, v'lakachta me'reishit kol pri hadama asher tavi mi'artzecha asher Adonai Elohecha noten lach v'samta v'tena. You should take your first fruits and put it in a basket and go to the Lord your God, this whole ceremony of Mikra Bikurim, of what you read in order to celebrate the bringing of the first fruits. And according to the halakha, you can bring the first fruits beginning on Atzeret.
So that's codified after, because this doesn't specify, right?
That's what I said. Torah Shebichtav doesn't say. Okay. So just like we have a certain offering of grain on Pesach, we have a certain offering of fruit on Shavuot, and in connection to the grain on Pesach and the fruit in Shavuot is the assertion, is the belief that that's the time of judgment for those particular things that we're offering.
This may not be a good question, but why can't the halakha leave it open that in different areas of Israel the first fruit is at a different time? So in Tiberia it will be different from at a higher altitude.
Well, you're right. You could, of course, only bring first fruits when they're fruits,
when they're
ready. And if you live in Tiberia, they won't be ready. Like, say, if you live in Yerushalayim, they won't be ready at Shavuot.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a problem.
But they will be ready in the Jordan Valley.
Right.
The third clause of the Mishnah, Berosh Hashanah Kol Ba'ei Ha'olam Ovrin Lefanav Kivnei Maron. Shneamar ha yotzer yachad libam hamivin el kol maasehem. Let's go back to the beginning of this third clause. Baruch Hashanah. So we see that this third clause of the Mishnah, this third list in the this third item list of four, begins like the other two began. Ba, a holiday. Ba Pesach, Ba Atzeret, Baruch Hashanah. But it's different than the other two because it doesn't say Rosh Hashanah al X. It says Rosh Hashanah kol ba'i olam, all of the comers of the world, in other words, all human beings, all inhabitants, ovrin lefanav, pass before him, and the nun at the end of the word ovrin, of course, is the influence from the Aramaic, and that's Mishneic Hebrew, that's influence from Aramaic, pass before him, and of course we know who him is, kivnei maron, like b'nei maron, like kids or like people of Maron. So here there are three different interpretations, but they all mean the same thing basically, so don't worry. Kivnei Maron could mean like B'nai Maron, like citizens, like people of this town of Maron.
Oh, yeah, next to Sfat.
Next to Sfat.
Yeah.
And what's special about it? It's in the mountains.
Yeah.
And the assumption is that you have to go up a narrow trail to get there.
Dangerous.
In other words, everyone passes in front of God like on a narrow trail. A narrow trail means that they're one by one. Mm-hmm. And that same understanding of one by one is found in the two other interpretations of what the phrase V'nei Maron means. Others say that Maron is from a word that means sheep. Like B'nei Maron, like members of the sheep flock. And also meaning they pass one by one by the master. A third interpretation is it means Hayalim. It means soldiers, and actually is a corrupted form from the Greek. You could look, if you want, in the commentary of Professor Albeck, which he points out right over here. He says, Hagirsa Nechona, the correct girsa, is that it's not two words, B'nai Maron, it's one word, and it's Kivnomron, which is a Greek word, which means soldiers. That's all. And he actually has at the bottom the Greek word for numeros. Numeros, which apparently means soldiers. I'm sorry, I said Greek. He says it's in Roman, in Latin. I apologize. So anyway, whether it's soldiers that are passing one by one, or sheep passing one by one, or it's the people who live in the town of Meron, the idea is that everyone passes one by one before God. Now let's read the verse. Shenemar, Hayotzer yachad libam hamivin al kol ma'aseihem. Let's see what words we can figure out from the verse. So the first word, Hayotzer.
The creator?
The creator. That could be the creator. Yachad.
Together.
Together, right, or all, something like that. Hayotzer yachad libam. The creator, yachad libam. The creator, all their libam, their hearts, right? Hamivin el kol ma'aseihem.
Understands all the deeds.
Understands all the deeds.
All their deeds.
So we understand that it's pretty related to what it's saying, that God understands, in other words, God inquires, God looks into, God knows, God judges perhaps all their deeds. We know what we're talking about, more or less. To go a little bit further, we want to look in the context of the verse in Sefer Tehillim. So we open up Sefer Tehillim. And we'll look at Tehillim Lamed Gimel.
Where's Tehillim in this?
It's pretty much near the end. Pretty much near the end. It's right near Psalms.
The sick paper, put them in the same place.
Yeah.
Chronically,
so we're on page 1454. I'm sorry, I made a mistake. I found Chaf Gimel instead of Lamed Gimel. So go to 1462. Top of 1462.
I have it.
And we read the first verse, Rananut Sadikim Badunai, Lai Sharim Nava Tehila. We all recognize it.
That's from Kabbalat Shabbat.
Yeah. From
Rananut Sadikim.
Isn't it? It's not Kabbalat Shabbat.
If say Psukei Dezimra of Shabbat early.
Oh, no. Okay. It's from
Psukei Dezimra. It's from Psukei Dezimra of Shabbat. Rananut Sadikim Badunai, Lai Sharim Nava Tehila.
Shabbat, right.
And it goes on. Let's read until we get to the 12th to 13th verse. Let's read the 13th verse. 13th. Yud Gimel. It's the end of a line. Mishamayim hibit Adonai ra'a et kol b'nei Adam.
Same thing.
Right? From heaven looked down God, saw all the b'nei Adam. Ah, it's related to our matter. That's pretty good, right? We feel good about this. Mimchon shifto Hishkiach el kol yoshvei haaretz. From the house of his dwelling, Hishkiach, he
looked over.
Looks over all of the dwellers of the earth. Ah, so it still fits. It's pretty good. Hayotzer yachad libam, hamivin el kol maaseihu. The creator of all of their hearts understands all of their deeds. So now really seeing context, it's very much talking about hashkacha, about divine providence, about looking over, about understanding and seeing. So it looks pretty good. I'll just say one thing that might add to understanding. The word hayotzer, Eric had said the creator, and that's certainly possible. And let's see what the art school says. The art school says, yeah, he fashions their hearts, so it's the same thing, right?
Fashions.
There's another way to look at it, which is the word yotzer, not the creator, but from the language of like yetzer, my yetzer, my inclination, my desire, my decision making, my yetzer. Hayotzer might be the decider, in other words, in our context, another word for decider.
God
decides,
the judger.
The judge.
The judge.
The judge. Uh-huh. The word itself might mean judge. The judger of all of their hearts, who understands all of their deeds.
Yeah.
The word might mean judge. We're not sure. So it might refer to the fact that he created us, but also might refer to what we're talking about right now, the judger of all of our hearts, the understander of all of our deeds. Okay. Let's leave that open. We'll come back to it perhaps a little bit. No, let's come to it, back to it right now. I want to show you another commentary. One of the lesser-known Rishonim, so lesser-known I even don't remember his name, I only remember the name of the Sefer, in the courses that I brought for you, on the sheets that I gave out, you have here the last page, the very last page, a Sefer called Sefer Mu'orot. And again, this is one of the Rishonim, a rather obscure Rishon, who I don't remember the name of the author. And in this commentary on Sechet Rosh Hashanah, I have in brackets there, see the place?
Yeah.
Shneimar. Hayotzer yachad libam, amivino kol maaseihem. That's the verse Perush. Be'et Shehael yit'ale. At the time that God, may he be exalted, Haya yotzer yachad libam, v'zehu Rosh Hashanah, at the time that God was creating together all of their hearts, which is Rosh Hashanah, as then hu mivin el kol maaseihem. Then he understands all their deeds. So this author is doing something very slight. He's just pointing out that when it says he fashions all their hearts, he understands their deeds, it's not that the two parts of the verse are parallel. Rather, the first part is setting the time, and the second part is saying what happens at the time. Hayotzer yachad libam.
Like when he...
When he fashioned their hearts, that's when he knows their deeds. And when did he fashion their hearts? Well, we know the world was created Tishrei. So at the time that God creates, that's the time every year that he knows their deeds. In other words, this interpretation of the verse has the verse not only telling us that God is a judger, but telling us when he's a judger, which is Rosh Hashanah. And if we're ready looking at commentaries, let's stay on the same page that I photostated. I photostated from Tfilat Musaf Shel Yom Kippur, right underneath it, from the Tfilah called Natana Tokef, which is a creation of the very, very early Middle Ages. I don't exactly remember when. It's the 7th century, the 8th century, I'm not sure. Is it later? I'm not sure.
I thought a little bit later.
Okay. 11th. So we can see this tefillah as a pirush on our Mishnah. Because what does it say? Uv'shofar gadol yitaka. Right? In a shofar that's great, will be sounded. Bekold mama daka yishama. And a great silent voice will be heard. Umalachim yechafezun. And the angels will, you know, will quicken, tremble. Bechel urada yochazein. Yochezun. Sorry about that. And fear and trembling will grip them in trembling. The Yomru Hine Yomadin, and they say, here is the Yomadin, Lifkod Al Tzva Marom Badin, to visit the host of heaven in judgment. Kilo Yisku Beinecha Badin, because no one will be meritorious before in your eyes in Din. Behold Ba'e Olam, that's from our Mishnah. See that?
Yes.
It's a comment on our Mishnah. V'chol ba'ei olam, all of the inhabitants of the world, ya'avrun, that's the word in the Mishnah, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Our Mishnah says, it says, what word does it say?
Ovrin.
Mishnah, ovrin. So this is a form of the same verb. Lefanecha, that's what the Mishnah says, lefanecha.
Yeah,
lefanecha. Kivnei maron, that's what the Mishnah says, yeah. Kivnei maron. But the question is, what does it mean? The next sentence says, kebakarat ro'eh edro. Which means like the checking or like the seeking of a roeh,
shepherd.
Of a shepherd, edro, his flock. So you see that the prayer is interpreting the Mishnah as if b'nei maron means eder, means a flock. And it goes on to explain that further. Ma'avir tzono tachat shivto. He causes to pass his tzon under his shevet, under his rod. In other words, he counts them one by one. Kein tavir v'tispor v'timneh. So he passes them by, and he counts them, and he numbers them. V'tifkod nefesh kol chai. And he visits the soul of all the living, etc. So I just wanted to show how the prayer is actually a commentary on our Mishnah.
And that particular interpretation finds itself in the Gemara.
Right, in the Gemara brings an interpretation that it means sheep. But like I said, Professor Albeck claims it's all a mistake. Mm-hmm. It's actually a corruption of the original Girsa, which was simply the Roman word numerus, meaning soldiers. But again, it's the same basic idea. Okay. Back to the Mishnah.
Question on literature, this as a piece of publication. Referring back to the Tanakh like that in quotes, that's, oh, it wasn't Tehillim, where was it from? It was from Tehillim, okay. Referring back to another source in quotes in the body of the, that's unusual for what we've seen so far. I don't know how common
true.
It is otherwise.
Good point.
What?
Good point.
What's unusual?
That it's not common that the Mishnah quotes verses.
Yeah.
Most usually the Mishnah doesn't give you the source and the foundation of the halakha, but just the final conclusion.
You see this elsewhere in the Mishnah?
You do, but you're right, it's rare. In Masechet Brachot, we might have seen 4 or 5 quotes out of the 60 Mishnayot we saw.
Yeah.
Right? That's not too many. Certainly less than 4 or 3% of the Mishnayot have quotes. And so I can say that means Darsheni, it means take notice, but what does it mean in this particular case to tell us? I'm not sure.
Just this question is a piece of literature.
I think I have to apologize because I didn't know it. 2 hours, I have 1 hour.
No need to apologize. It was good to have you for the time that
you
were here.
My pleasure. You know what? This is learning is always the best.
Yeah. Machaya.
Would it be going too far to claim that, if that's true, that it's unusual to bring a pasuk, that the pasuk may have been added after?
Hatzlacha.
On the basis of that it's unusual?
I don't know.
Okay.
But talking about before and after you, we will see something that does have some chronological indication that okay. something here is after. You're right.
Okay.
Let's go to the fourth now. The fourth clause of the list in the Mishnah. And what I want to do when I'm reading this fourth clause is to make sure at the same time we can see the earlier part of the Mishnah. So hold the two pages of paper, if you have two pages, so you can see the beginning of the Mishnah while we're reading the end of it. Uvechag nidonim al hamayim. And on the chag, they are judged on the water. So let's ask here the same questions we would ask when we learned the clauses earlier. Uvechag. When is chag? What is chag?
Sukkot.
Sukkot, right. It was Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Pesach, Atzeret, and Chag. Chag is the rabbinic name for Chag HaSukkot. The next word is Nidonim. Let's leave that for a second.
Okay.
Al Hamayim, on the water. So concerning the water, one asks the same two questions we asked at the earlier parts of the Mishnah. Are there any indications in the Torah that Sukkot is the time for water? And number two, are there any more fundamental reasons we can think of why this would be a time for judgment on water? So let's start with the second question. What's the connection in a very, very basic agricultural, natural sense between Chag and the water?
Start of the rain.
Right, start of the rainy season. So now let's look at what we discovered. Pesach is a time of judgment for the grain, and it's the time that the grain is just about ready. Shavuot is the time for judgment on the fruit, and it's the time that the fruits are just about ready. And Sukkot is the time for judgment on the water, and it's the time that the water is just about ready to come. So the pattern is very clear. The pattern is very clear. And like I said, the Meiri claims that the idea is that judgment comes at the very last minute. Judgment can't come when the water already came down, because then you have it already. It could have come much earlier. You could say God decides everything. Attrition, millions of years ago, you could have said. No. Everything is decided at the very, very last minute, which means that there's always time for change. Everything is precarious. Nothing is clear until the last minute. That seems to be the idea. Okay. Second point. Is there any indication in the Torah or in the Tanakh of a connection between Mayim and Sukkot?
Mm.
So the answer is not really. We did see the verses in Dvarim chapter 11 last time, that it says that God has his eyes on the earth to inquire of it from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. And we saw in that context, beginning and end refers to the rainy season. So there is an idea that God judges the water at the rainy... Sorry. God judges at the beginning of the rainy season. But any specific mention of Sukkot in that context we don't have. But we have a rabbinic Torah Shebal Peh that says that just like at Pesach, we bring a certain offering that's what's about to be harvested, and at Shavuot we bring a certain offering. We said it's the beginning of the Bikurim, it's about to be harvested. At Sukkot we bring a certain offering of water. What is it? The water offering? What's it? What's the water offering? Anybody know? At Sukkot?
The Nes...
Right, you said it. The Nisuch HaMayim.
Nisuch HaMayim.
Right. On Sukkot, we pour water on the Mizbeach.
The libation.
The water libation.
Yeah.
The water that comes, remember, from the Mei HaShiloach.
Yeah.
Right? The Mei HaShiloach. What does it literally mean, Mei HaShiloach? Means the waters of the Shiloach spring that flows right out in the city of David.
That's where the Simchat Beit
HaShoeva. Simchat Beit HaShoeva. When they fill the water, vessels to bring it to the temple to pour on the Mizbeach. So now we see the parallel. That at the beginning of the three different seasons of those things that the world is dependent upon, the grain, the fruit, and the water, we have some type of religious ceremony connected to the temple that celebrates those three things, and we say it's a time of judgment on those three things. The missing link would be to say that the water libation and the Omer and the Bikurim are some type of tefillah, some type of vakasha, mm-hmm. request that this is the time of judgment. We want God to judge us for good. So that all fits pretty well.
And it only makes context, it sense in the context of Israel, the land of Israel, the climate. And
right, that's a very good point. That when it says the world is judged for the fruit, the world is judged for the water, it means world from the perspective of someone who lives in the Middle East.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say the same things in Texas, because the whole natural cycle is different. Okay, let's see a few commentaries before we go back and find the deeper meaning in this whole thing. So, let's look at the commentaries I brought on the second sheet from the Sifrei Parshat Pinchas. The Sifrei, of course, is the Midrash Halakha from the Tannaitic period on the book of Bamidbar and on the book of Dvarim. It's Tannaitic and it's Halachic, usually. And it says, Rabbi Akiva Omer, Ne'mar hiviu Omer b'feisach, shetit barech lechem et tevua. It says, bring Omer on Pesach that will be blessed for you, the Tevuah. Mm-hmm. Hiviu bikurim batzeret, bring the first fruits on the tzeret. Again, it means that's the first time you can bring them. Kedei shit barchu lechem perot ilan, in order that will be blessed for you, the perot ilan. Af linsoch hamayim, also to pour the water on the Mizbeach, Bechag, on Sukkot, Shit Barchu Lechem Gishmei Shana. It will be blessed for you the rains of the year. So you see that the Sifra makes the connection between the religious act that we do and the judgment, and it's a time of prayer for the judgment. And the prayer is symbolically acted out by the water libation and by the Omer and by the Bikurim. Okay. But of course, what's missing from all this, there's only three of the four in the Mishnah. What about Rosh Hashanah? So now let's look at a further development of that Midrash, which I quoted at it on the next page, which comes from the Tosefta. And the Tosefta in Rosh Hashanah Perek Aleph says... you see the second line there in my bracket? Amar Rabbi Akiva. Amrat Torah, the Torah said, Havei Omer Su'urin b'Pesach, bring an Omer of barley on Pesach, Shehu Perek Su'urin, that it's the Perek of Su'urin. It means it's the juncture of wheat, I'm sorry, of barley. It's the time when the barley is beginning to be ripe. Kedei Shetit Barek Lechem Tivuah, in order that the Tivuah will be blessed. So you see how this is parallel to the Sifrei. It's almost word for word. Certain different forms of the verbs have changed, but it's almost word for word. Hevei chitim bikurim batzeret shu perek eilan. Bring wheat that is new, that is bikurim, on Shavuot. So Perek Eilan, that is the time of the trees, Kedei Shitbarchu Alecha Perot Ilan, in order that the fruit of the trees will be blessed. But here we have the problem. It should have said here, you should bring Bikurim of the fruit of the tree, but instead it said, bring Bikurim of the wheat. What's the connection between wheat and fruit of the tree? The same issue I brought up when Eric mentioned earlier. Here I'm going to mention a girsa that answers the question. Notice that what it says is bring chitim bikurim. Bring wheat that is the first fruits. But it doesn't make sense grammatically. It should have said bikurei chitim, the first of the fruits.
So chitim bikurim doesn't make sense.
Chitim bikurim doesn't make sense as a girsa, which I wrote on the side of the page, that adds a vav. Havei chitim uvikurim. Bring wheat and bikurim. And the bikurim doesn't refer to the wheat, it's something else. It's the fruit of the trees that is bikurim. And then the whole thing makes sense. The chitim are brought at Shavuot time, but the point is the Bikurim of the fruits, because it's the beginning of the fruit of the trees.
And then Hashem will bless Kadesh Baruch Hu Alecha Perot HaYivan. That makes sense.
Right, and then you don't have to go to the standing on your head to say that fruit is that wheat is really a tree. No, right. It's talking about wheat and fruit of the tree. So the fruit of the tree will be blessed. So after saying that, we see that again, this Tosefta is parallel almost word for word to the Sifrei that we brought earlier. And it goes on to say, Havei Nisu Chamayim Bechag, bring the libation of the water on Sukkot, Kadesh Yitbarchu Alecha Meik Shamim, in order that will be blessed upon you the waters of rain. And again, it's almost word for word, like we saw in the Sifrei. But now comes an addition. Amru Lefanav Malchiot Zichronot V'Shofarot. Say before him, Malchiot Zichronot V'Shofarot. So in other words, the Malchiot Zichronot V'Shofarot are parallel to the Nisuch HaMayim, to the Omer, and to the Bikurim.
Yeah.
Just like those three are prayers, so the Malchiot Zichronot V'Shofarot are also prayers for the coming judgment. Malchiot Kedei Shetamlichuhu Aleihem, Malchiot, in order that they will make him king upon him. Zichonot, Kedei Shiavo Zichonchem L'Tova L'Fav, Zichonot, in order that your memory, in other words, your memory will come for good before him. Shofarot, Kedei Shata Let Tfilotechem B'Trua L'Fav, in order that your tefillah should go up in a shofar blast before him. But the idea is that here, this Tosefta has an addition over and above what the Sifrei had. The Sifrei was only talking about the three pilgrimage festivals. The Tosefta adds Rosh Hashanah into the mix. But it comes last. Mm-hmm. Chronologically, it should be
before Sukkot.
Third, before Sukkot. You see, it's probably an addition. It's an afterthought. Which brings up what you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Now, it's in our Mishnah. Ushana is integrated in a chronological list, even though it's different than all the others, and we'll explain the difference a little bit later. So you can almost see a progression here from the Sifrei that doesn't mention Ushana at all, to the Tosef that mentions it, but at the end, to the Mishnah that it mentions it and integrates it into the chronological development.
Well, I'm a little bit surprised, because, this is dated to about the year 200. The Sifrei, what kind of date would...
So, Eric's making a good point. We should ask the historical question, from what period is each text, but it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because the dates we know are redaction dates of the work as a work.
Uh-huh.
But it says nothing about the formulation of the individual statements and halachot within the text.
Right.
For example, the Mishnah, was redacted in the year 200. But when was any specific Mishnah brought to its final form? It could have been 1,000 years before that.
Yeah.
It was only redacted into the final work at that late date. So therefore it doesn't work. So I'm implicitly assuming that what we saw in the Sifrei is the most ancient of these texts.
Mm-hmm.
What we see in the Tosefta is a second stage. What we see in the Mishnah is a third stage. Okay. Now, let's...
And if the Mishnah is redacted for the purpose of mnemonic device that's easy to remember, it makes sense that it goes in order. It's easier to...
You could look at it like that, but I also think that it's trying to give you a progression of the year.
Right.
Okay, so now I want to take everything we learned and make some larger ideological sense of it. So let's look at the Mishnah. Okay. So we make 2 minutes for it to come back, since it's 33% of the class.
33 1/3.
Have you inquired where everybody else has been going?
David Radunsky is in Israel.
He's
in Israel. Brooks Alkick is ill. He called me last night. Steve Matinsky, I don't know. Sam has finals. Ruvain,
so
hasn't been with us. Finals in what sense?
I have a final exam on Thursday.
After your degree?
Yeah.
So at least you have time to study, you know, but you don't have a lot of work to do.
That's right.
Yeah, and who else did I leave out?
It was just a confluence of
Mr. Galler. Excuse.
Mr. Galler, so he must be not feeling well. I didn't see him in davening.
Yeah, I didn't see him on Shabbat.
Yeah, okay, let me see. So, okay. So what I want to do now is go back to the Mishnah and look at the big picture. And the big picture has to do with the difference between three of the four judgment times and the one judgment time. Three of these judgment times are regalim, right? Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. One of them is not. Rosh Hashanah is not. Secondly, all of the three are judgment for something specific. Grain, fruit, and water. Mm-hmm. Whereas Rosh Hashanah doesn't say what it's judgment for. Doesn't say. Thirdly, none of these three have a verse except for Shoshanah. Shoshanah has a verse mentioned. In other words, there's a clear distinction between three and one here.
Yeah.
And also we saw that in the sources, in the Sifrei, there's no mention of Shoshanah at all. And in the Tosefta, it's an tack on at the end. Clearly it's different. Shoshanah is different than Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. So let's go deeper into the difference. As far as Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, it says the whole world is judged for something. As far as Rosh Hashanah, it says that all the comers of the world pass before him like sheep. But it doesn't say for what we're judged. And let me mention something else. In a grammatical sense, notice something very strange here. This Mishnah has a koteret, right? A heading.
Yeah.
And four members of a list. But notice that of the four members of the list, only three are connected to the koteret. What do I mean? Ba'arba'a frakim olam nidon befesach halativua, right? And on atzeret on perot elan. The mention of Pesach, the mention of atzeret, comes under the koteret. You can see grammatically, at four stages the world is judged, mm-hmm. Colon, at Pesach on the Tivu. And it doesn't use the word world, doesn't use the word judge, because it's relying on the koteret.
Right.
But what about the statement, Barosh Hashanah, Kol Ba'ei Olam Ovrim Lefanav Kivnei Maron. At Rosh Hashanah, all the inhabitants of the world come before him like sheep. It doesn't refer back to the heading. It's a full sentence. It doesn't need the koteret.
But doesn't it still fall under that koteret because it's saying four times of the year the world is judged? So on Rosh Hashanah, that's one of the times of the year the world...
You're right. That's true. But it's different than the other three. The other three are not sentences.
Right.
They are rather continuations of the koteret.
Yeah.
This one is a full sentence which would have made full sense outside of the koteret.
That's true.
Right? You could say it's an independent idea that's brought from someplace else. In other words, it could be that the original Mishnah said, at 3 points the world is judged. And it mentioned the 3 points of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And then you have a separate statement that says in Rosh Hashanah, that all the world's inhabitants pass before him like sheep. It's a separate sentence. It doesn't need the koteret. It's put into the Mishnah, and the koteret has changed from 3 to 4. Right? I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying you can understand, you can see now how different the statement about Rosh Hashanah is from the other three.
Yeah.
It's a completely different idea.
It's hard for me, though, to understand Barosh Hashanah Kol Bayolam Ovrim Lefanav Kitne Maron. I think it's hard for me to understand that without the koteret. Because for what purpose are they passing before? The koteret says that makes it that they're passing before...
I hear what you're saying. Okay, it could be, you're right... I can see it going both ways.
Okay.
You could say that it really does imply something, or perhaps you're right, it does need the koteret. Okay? But anyway, my point is clear that it's a different type of statement. Yeah. So after saying all that, that it's a different type of statement on so many different levels, I want to ask now the philosophical, theological question as follows. Wait a second. Not only is the mention of Rosh Hashanah different than the mention of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, I would say it's even in conflict with them. Why? Because if at Rosh Hashanah everyone passes before God to be judged, then that's the judgment. What is this other judgment at Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot? What else do you need? If I'm judged, and you're judged, we're all judged at Rosh Hashanah, then that means it's decided what our fate's going to be. How much water we're going to have, how much drink we're going to have, we're going to live, we're going to die, everything. So then why do you have to tell me that the world is judged at Pesach on grain? That's superfluous. I've been judged in Rosh Hashanah for everything that concerns me. Of course, the judgment for the grain is not for the good of the grain. It's how much grain human beings will get, right? So what do you mean? What kind of judgment is it? It's been judged already to Rosh Hashanah. In other words, there's a fundamental conflict here. What type of conflict? A conflict of... how did I say it? It's either this or that. Yeah. Either the world is judged for the tivua at one point, for the water at another point, for the fruit at another point, which covers my whole life.
Yeah.
Or I'm judged at Rosh Hashanah. It's two different ideas that are grafted onto the other. There's a fundamental conflict within this Mishnah. And it's extremely disturbing. And you can't believe how many hours I've spent thinking about this in the past 20 years.
Could you say that, I mean, the kind of judgment on Rosh Hashanah is very ambiguous? If you take the Koter, Barabaprakim Ha'olam Nidon, and then read the Rosh Hashanah as part of that Koter, but judged for what? It's very unclear. That
okay, because I'm assuming judged in the sense of judged completely. Perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps we'll have to find a way to limit it, to find room for the judgment on Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Okay. So what I want to do now is pointed that I think that the question we just asked is the key to understanding the point of the whole thing. And of all the Rishonim, there is one Rishon that begins to put his finger on this fundamental theological and philosophical point. That's the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim. So I brought the Ran for us. And the Ran is photostated on the second sheet.
That's the father of the Torah? All right.
Rabbeinu Nissim is no, he's not connected. The Ran is a student of the Ramban.
Oh, okay. That's
so the Ran says, Rabbeinu Nissim in his commentary on Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Daf Taf Zayin Amud.
Wait, where is it?
Tet Zayin. It's on the earlier.
Bottom of the second page.
It says, Kashali, Kevan de Adam Nidon Barosh Hashanah, Vadai al kol ha-mo'orot shelo daninoto. Difficult to me. Since that man is judged at Rosh Hashanah, certainly on all of the happenings of his, they judge him. Al kol ha-mo'orot, everything, you judge for everything.
What's your opinion?
Rosh Hashanah. Which would mean that he's judged al tivato, he's judged for his wheat, for peyotav, and on his fruit, the Shar Sakab and all the rest of his things. V'kevan shekein hakol nidon Rosh Hashanah, and therefore all is judged Rosh Hashanah. That's his question. If all is judged Rosh Hashanah, what do we need? And what's the meaning of these other judgments? Says the Ran, V'nichali, it sits well with me. In other words, I think that the following is the explanation. The Shlosha Dvarim Halalu Lichlal haolam nidon begimel prakim hashnuyim b'mishnateinu. It sits with me that these three things, in other words, the grain and the fruit and the water, for the generality of the world, lichlal haolam, for the generality of the world, are judged at these gimel, at these three prakim, these three junctures that are shnuyim, that are learned in the Mishnah. So the important words there were klal holam, the universal, the generality. Kevan sha'anu ro'im she tzivta Torah litzibur Levi bismanim halalu dvarim shamarim alehem echad echad bismano. Since we see that commanded the Torah to the congregation, to the tzibur, to bring at these times things that show in them each their time. In other words, on, like we said, at Pesach we bring the Omer, which is about the grain, and about Shavuot time we bring the fruit, and about Sukkot time we bring the water. They all show that that's the time of judgment.
Because it fits in well with the natural cycle.
Fits in with the natural cycle. And that is for the klal holam, it's for the generality of the world. Aval barosh hashanah, kol ba'ei olam ovrim lefanav echad echad. But at Rosh Hashanah, all the inhabitants of the world pass before him one by one, v'gozrin alav, and it's decreed upon them, chelko midvarim halalu, their part in these things.
In other words, it's individualistic. Is that the idea?
Right. Uh-huh. There's a general judgment, and then there's an individual judgment. Though it's decided for the world how much grain, how much water, how much fruit. But then, there has to be a decision of how much you get in that. Of course, if God decided that there's a 50% reduction for the world this year, everyone's going to get less.
Right.
But individuals are going to get less depending on their deeds. That's what the Ran says. You hear the Ran? So that makes sense. But I want to take the Ran one step further, and I want to try and analyze in that abstract theological sense what is the foundation of the words he's saying. The Ran is really making a distinction between what we call hashkaha klalit and hashkaha pratit, between general providence and individual providence. And the truth is, each of these two things can be independent of the other, and they can be exclusive of the other. You could take a position that there's only general providence, which means individuals are not judged for their deeds. Rather, as a group, there's judgment. And that would be the three parts of the Mishnah, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. There's a general judgment, and whether you're good or bad individually doesn't matter. Rather, it depends on the group. It might be the whole world, it might be the nation, it might be a geographical area, but it's a group. Or you could take the opposite approach, the Rosh Hashanah approach, that there's no such thing as general providence. It's only individual providence, only each individual. And there is no judgment for groups. The Mishnah combines the two. So we want to think of the background to this. And the background to this is really a very, very, in my opinion, serious question of how to read the Torah. And we could talk about this for ages, but I'll just give you one example. So I wrote on the sheets here to look in Sefer Dvarim, chapter 11, verses 12 to 17. Again, our subject now is general and individual providence. And the place we're starting with this is Shema Yisrael, the second paragraph of the Shema. So again, it's in Sefer Dvarim. Of course, we could also look in the Sidurim, but Sefer Dvarim is also a good place to look. It's the same passage, chapter 12. It's on page 458. Oh, I'm wrong. It's not on 458.
It's 456.
Or
454.
454.
Chapter 11.
Right, it's chapter 11. I said chapter 12, and I was mistaken. It's chapter 11, beginning from about, let's say, oh, here I did make a mistake in the sheets. The sheets I said...
It's 454.
454, and the sheets I said chapter 11, verses 12, but it's not verse 12, it's verse 13.
Mm-hmm.
Vayayim shamoa tishmul mitzvotai, asher anuchi mitzave etchem hayom, le'ahava et Adonai Eloheichem ulovdo, v'chol levavchem v'chol nafshechem. V'natati matar artzechem bi'ito yure umalkosh. V'asafta diganecha v'tirosh shecha v'yitzarecha. So, we're told to do the mitzvot. And then it says, I will bring rain to your land in its season. The first rain, the last rain, and you'll gather in your grain and your other produce. So,
clearly it's talking about schar va'onish, right? Reward and punishment. And the reward the Torah promises is rain, which leads to good crops. And everyone knows, it's a given, that rain falls not just in my backyard, in your backyard, it falls for the land.
Right.
And there can be no possibility of hashkacha pratit if your metaphor is rain. Because rain, by definition, falls in large swaths of land.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that in the fundamental passage in which the Torah presents its concept of reward and punishment, it's talking about hashkacha kalit. And then it says, "V'natati esef v'sadecha levehemtecha v'chalta v'savata." Hishamru lechem. Then the negative. Hishamru lechem. Be careful. Pen yivtel levavchem, lest your hearts go astray. V'sartem v'avadtem Elohim acharim v'shlachavitem lehem v'chara af Adonai bechem. And God gets angry. What does God do when He's angry? V'tzarat ha'shamayim, holds back the heaven. It doesn't say God zaps you with disease. It says God holds back the rain. And it goes on to say, it'll be lost from the land, which obviously in this context doesn't mean an individual, it means a nation. It means famine, which touches all. And if you go through the Torah, which obviously we won't do now, you find again and 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 again, it's all about hashkacha kalit. There's almost no mention in the whole Torah of hashkacha pratit. Not at all.
Yeah, even stam v'amara.
Stam v'amara, right?
That's kalit.
Is klal. It's true that the patriarchs, Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, related to God as individuals before the nation, so they had an individual relationship with God.
Maybe also in Shmuel, Chana.
So there are individuals, unique individuals, who are rewarded and punished at certain points. But in general, when the Torah talks about reward and punishment, it's talking about hashkacha klalit. There are rare places which it might seem the Torah is talking about hashkacha pratit.
Moshe Rabbeinu?
Well, again, that's a unique individual.
Yeah.
And the place I'm thinking about is the Ten Commandments. Let's look at the Ten Commandments. Whether we could look in here in Sefer Dvarim, it's in chapter 5. All right, page 440, chapter 5. And I'm thinking of the commandment of honor your father and mother. Where it says, in verse Tet Zion, 16, Kaved bi chavet imecha, kasher tzivcha Adonai Elohecha, leman yarichun yamecha, uleman yitav lach al adama.
Oh, that sounds collective.
Well, I'm bringing it to say that it's probably collective, even though it sounds individual.
Yeah.
Right? Honor your father and your mother, as Hashem your God commands you, so the days will be lengthened, so it will be good for you. On the land that Hashem your God gives you, you might interpret that to mean individual providence, but in the context of the Torah, it's probably not. It's probably saying that if a society honors its father and mother, then your days will be lengthened in the sense of it'll be good for you upon the land. In other words, the Jewish society will be established if you have a proper respect for authority figures. The other two places the Torah uses the same phrase, lengthening of days and it'll be good for you, is the mitzvah of Shiluach HaKen and the mitzvah of weights and measures. And I'm proposing in all these three cases, it's really talking about hashkacha klalit.
In Kiddushin...
Right, it's against... The Gemara interprets it as hashkacha pratit.
Yeah, okay.
But it has a problem with that interpretation, because it says it's not true.
Right.
You remember the Gemara? We learned this once. The Gemara says the father sends his child up to the tree to send away the mother bird. And on the way down, the kid falls and breaks his neck and dies. The Gemara says, where is the length of days for this boy? He did the two mitzvot, the promised length of days. Shiluach HaKen and honoring parents, and all they got is a broken neck. So by asking that question, the Gemara is assuming that it means hashkacha pratit.
Yeah.
The Gemara gives the answer that it gives, but a better answer, I'm sorry, a alternative answer might be it really means hashkacha kalit.
That seems...
Which is in accord with the rest of the Torah. I remember one source offhand that clearly talks about hashkacha pratit. There might be others. The one source is the very end of the Torah, which I listed on the sheets for you in Sefer Dvarim, chapter 29, verse 13.
And this is a source that people often miss. It's a little bit obscure, a little bit hard to understand. We're looking at 29:13, which is page 498. This is in the context of the Bracha Nekhala, the end of the Bracha Nekhala, chapter 29, Chavtet, verse Yud Gimel, and henceforth. So page 498. Parshat Nitzavim, Atem Nitzavim, right, the whole thing of Atem Nitzavim, the covenant. And then in verse 13 it says, Lo itchem levadchem, anuchi korot et habrit hazot, I'm not making this covenant only with you. V'ta'ala hazot, ki et asher yeshno po imanu medayom lifnei Adonai Eloheinu, v'et asher eninu po imanu, I'm making it with those who are here and those who aren't here. Ki etem yedatem, for you know, you know Jewish history, we've gone through it. V'tiru et shikutseihem v'tgilu lehem eitz ve'evin kesef v'zahav v'sher imahem. You've seen all the idolatry of the nations. Listen to this. Pein yesh bechem ish o isha. Lest there be among you a man or woman, o mishpacha o shevet, Asher levavo fone hayom mi'im Adonai Eloheinu lelechet lavod et Elohei Agoyim ahem. Pein yesh bechem shorosh poreh rosh v'lana. So it says, lest there be a person, man or woman, or family or a tribe, that is thinking of worshipping idols. V'haya v'shomo et divrei alazot. And it would be that when he hears this covenant, Vitbarech bilvavo lemor, he may bless himself in his heart, saying, Shalom Yeli. It'll be okay with me. Shalom Yeli. Ki bishrirut libi elech, because I will go according to the hardness of my heart. Leman safot hara'ava et hatzmeah. That's an important phrase. And I don't know how the art school translates it. Let's see if I'm going to cry out in grief or I'm going to be happy. The English says, thereby adding the watered upon the thirsty. I will translate a little bit differently and explain. Laman sefot harava et atzmea, in order that cover the water the thirsty. What it means is the following. I know that God judges the Jewish people according to Hashkacha Klalit. The Torah has talked about that again and again and again. And here I am at the final covenant when Moshe Rabbeinu is about to die. And Moshe says, lest there be a man or a woman who secretly in his heart thinks of worshipping idolatry, and he says to himself, I'll be okay because the watered will cover the thirsty. What is he saying? He's saying, I'll be okay, because since there's only Hashkacha Klalit, if I sin, I'm only an individual. God won't get me, because God is concerned with the collective.
Uh-huh.
This is the verse in the Torah that puts its finger on the problematics of Hashkacha Klalit.
Right.
This is a central wow. verse in the theology of Hashkacha. And the answer of Moshe Rabbeinu is verse Yutet, Lo yoveh Adonai salachlo. God will not be pleased to forgive him. Ki az yashan af Adonai bekinato. Then God will be angry be'ish ahu at that man, not just a collective but an individual.
Right.
Rav tsa bo, and will come upon him kol alak tuva b'sefer hazeh, and all of the evil things mentioned in this brit will come upon the individual. Umacha Adonai et shmo mitachat hashemayim, and God will wipe out his name. Vivdilo Adonai l'ra, and God will separate him for evil. So here it says clearly that there's such a thing as hashkacha pratit, despite the fact that the major influences and the major framework, the major mode, is hashkacha klalit. And I think that our Mishnah is a classic rabbinic text in trying to present for us the interplay of hashkacha klalit and hashkacha pratit. Yes, there's such a thing as hashkacha klalit, That's Pesach, Shavuot, Mitzukot, but that's not everything. There's something else, which is called Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is the rabbinic effort to translate the idea of Hashkacha Pratit here in Parshat Nitzavim into a concrete sense that the Jew lives with. And in addition to the Omer and the Bikurim, the Nisuch HaMayim, which could cover everything, if all you have is Hashkacha Kalit, there's also the idea of Rosh Hashanah. So in a certain sense, Rosh Hashanah is the embodiment of the verses we just read here in Parshat Nitzavim. It's the judgment that's fundamentally mentioned here in Parshat Nitzavim. That's my major point.
What's the can you say anything about the Rambam's position on Hashgacha?
It's at the end of the guide, in his commentary on the Book of Job, is where he deals with the idea of Hashgacha Pratit, at the third part of the guide. I wrote a term paper on it once for my degree, but I really don't have any, you know, important things to say there. The Rambam deals with how does Hashgacha Pratit work, and he talks about the intellectual bond between man and God, but it's not really relevant here. Okay, so all I want to say to put things together is that the Masechet is called Masechet Rosh Hashanah, and it talks about Rosh Hashanah. And in our Mishnah here, you see how the rabbi situated Rosh Hashanah in the background of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot as the embodiment of Hashgacha Pratit. And of course, and it's interesting that of all the holidays, Rosh Hashanah is the one that the least is said about it. And the Torah never said it's a time of Hashgacha Pratit. That's the rabbinic understanding, based on the idea that the world was created in Tishrei. So it must be a time of renewal, which means it must be a time of judgment. When you begin again, you have to look back to the past. And we'll end with this point, which is the connection between the first Mishnah and the second Mishnah of the chapter. At the first Mishnah, mentioned four New Years. The second Mishnah mentions four times of judgment. The one date that's common to the two of them is Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Nothing mentioned in the second Mishnah is mentioned in the first. Nothing in the first is in the second except for Rosh Hashanah. There's the first of Nisan in the first one, whereas in our Mishnah it's the 15th of Nisan. It's not the same date. The first Mishnah mentions the first of Elul, mentions Tu B'Shvat, right? They're not mentioned in our Mishnah. The only date that's common to both of them is Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is really the core of both of them. It's the point of both of them. What does the first Mishnah say? It says Rosh Hashanah, the first of Tishrei, is the beginning time for the counting of the year. Our Mishnah says Rosh Hashanah is the ending time for the accounting of human deeds. And the two go hand in hand. You say the Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the year, and therefore it must be the time of looking back. If you're going to begin again, then necessarily, in order for that beginning again to be meaningful, there has to be a looking back. So therefore, the first Mishnah says we're looking forward. The second Mishnah says if you're looking forward, you also have to look back. And it's that same date that is the beginning of the year for individuals, not Jews, right? For the whole world in a universal sense. And the second Mishnah says each individual in the world has to look back also as the judge himself while he's being judged by God in order to be able to go into that new year properly. That's it, folks.
Thank you.
Can I have your Siddur, please? That's a Siddur in the deck.
It's not.
No, it's a Mishnah.
Okay.
Would you even say something, since I know you...